We have to do everything in the toolbox to get to net zero, and CCUS will also form a component of that. So we have to do all the reduction that we need to do. We have to have all the renewables on the system that we can. And even with all this, we will still need CCUS. In the UK, in terms of how it's being rolled out, it's around industrial clusters. So it's really targeting the industrial decarbonisation that we'll need. So for industries like cement, chemicals, refining, etc. We're still going to need those products. And until we have sort of viable alternatives, carbon capture is the only route for some of those in terms of decarbonisation.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back for another instalment of Transmission. Today's guest is Olivia Prowess, UK Director at the CCS Association. The conversation covers how carbon capture utilisation and storage is vital in decarbonising hard-to-abate sectors, how the technology works, and what we need to do to scale up this operation. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And with that, let's jump in.
Hello, Olivia. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, and thank you for having me here today.
It's a pleasure. So let's get straight into it. What is carbon capture and storage?
Carbon capture and storage is a whole set of industries that work together as part of a value chain, but it's a process essentially by which carbon dioxide is captured from waste products, from power generation or industrial processes, or even directly from the atmosphere, so greenhouse gas removal technologies, and then it's either used or it's put into permanent geological storage in perpetuity. And it's a crucial role in a transition to getting to net zero and building the low carbon economy.
Cool. Actually, let's get the acronyms right first. Is it CCS? Is it CCUS? Define this for our listeners.
Which all of the above. So I am UK director at the CCSA, which is the Carbon Capture and Storage Association. That's a trade association. It's Europe's leading trade association to promote the commercial deployment of carbon capture, utilisation and storage. We talk about CCUS, so that's carbon capture, utilisation and storage. Others in the industry talk about CCS, which is carbon capture and storage. So it's just missing out the utilisation part. So both are correct. They're all forms of capturing the carbon and then either using it, ideally in perpetuity. So there's a question about how long you use it, if you use it in utilisation, so how long it's taken out of the atmosphere for. And then storage is long-term geological storage. And as what we do is the trade association, we've got over 120 members from the UK and Europe and some global members as well, to with the ambition of deploying CCUS at a commercial scale so that we can meet net zero goals both in the UK and in Europe and worldwide. And we have to explain, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, more, but to explain the industry and how it works, we've got members right across the value chain. So we've got, we have members who are working in the different applications of carbon capture. So working in the transportation of CO2, so looking at pipeline or ship or other non-pipeline, so road and rail. We have members who are developing storage, so developing CO2 storage. These are typically oil and gas, traditional oil and gas members, because they understand the subsurface. We have members who are looking at developing the technology to capture the carbon, and that's a continually sort of evolving space. And then we have members who are looking to deploy the technology, so gas power members, cement plants, refineries, all these industries that are going to need carbon capture if they're to meet net zero. And then increasingly, members of the supply chain who are going to supply it, and also the service industry, so financial, insurance, etc. So it's a very broad space, and it's not, you know, it's an industry that in order to work, you've got to have all these parts of the value chain working together.
And it's not a new idea, right? CCS or CCUS has been going around for a few decades. What's the background there before we get stuck into the thesis?
Yeah, it's not new at all. There are projects that have been operating for over 25 years, and Norway's got projects that have been successfully storing CO2 for you know, over 20 to 25 years. It's also used in the States, and it's a proven technology there. I think the new point is that it to be deployed at scale. At the scales at which we're looking globally to store that CO2 in perpetuity, this is the that this is the bit that's changing. But in terms of an actual technology, no, it's not new at all, and it's proven. There are projects around the world that have been operating, and obviously with new projects and projects at scale, there are always some issues about how they'll move forward. But ultimately, it's not a new technology at all.
And so if we can get the thesis right, and I want to make this really, really basic. So if I understand it correctly, what the CCUS folks are saying is we're going to carry on burning stuff into the future, right? We have to for certain industries. And there's a range of the level of fossil fuel use that we need, depending on how much electrification you think there's going to be. And what the CCUS folks are saying is, well, we can take that carbon that's produced in that process and store it or use it somewhere elsewhere. But the key driver of this is there are some industries or some processes that will always create carbon. And we can discuss the extent of that. But because I think some of the controversies around CCUS is that it could encourage more, you know, thermal power generation, for example, which there's a strong case to be made that we could move completely away from thermal in the future. But if we're going to store the carbon that comes out of it, the incentive to turn those kind of generating units into renewables disappears. But the thesis here is that there is some amount of carbon that will always be produced in the future, and it's a good thing if we can get it somewhere else and store it and either put it in the ground or utilize it for something else. Is that the key premise here before we move further?
Yeah, and I think it's worth sort of emphasizing at this point that it's in all credible scenarios that are put forward towards reaching net zero, carbon capture, utilization, storage forms some part of that. So in the UK, the Climate Change Committee does the modeling and in terms of how we're going to meet our carbon budgets, and CCUS is always part of all those scenarios. So it's and the same with the IPCC and IEA. It's not seen as this is an either or, and this is something else that we continue just using fossil fuels in perpetuity. We have to do everything in the toolbox to get to net zero, and CCUS will also form a component of that. So we have to do all the reduction that we need to do. We have to have all the renewables on the system that we can. And even with all this, we will still need CCUS. So, I mean, really in the UK, in terms of how it's being rolled out, it's around industrial clusters. So it's really targeting the industrial decarbonisation that we'll need. So for industries like cement, chemicals, refining, etc., we're still going to need those products. And until we have sort of viable alternatives, carbon capture is the route for and the only route for some of those in terms of decarbonisation. You also talked about power. Carbon capture with gas CCGTs, thermal power. Again, I'll not talk about it in the UK example, but the proposal in the UK is that this would only be, so abated gas would only be dispatched after renewables. So you use all the renewables on the system that you can. And once, you know, when there isn't sufficient renewables there to power the grid, then you would go to abated gas. When there isn't enough of that, then you would go down to unabated. So that's how it's been designed in the system. And in fact, with power, CCUS with power will enable more renewables on the system because it provides that flexible backup. So it's not instead of renewables, it's not instead of battery storage, it's not instead of any of these, it's alongside. And I think that's the important bit to flag, is that we're not going to get net zero just by looking at one of these technologies. We've got to deploy all of them.
How does that work? I've never heard that before. So CCUS will help us get more renewables. What's the logic there?
In terms of, talk about the UK grid. So we've made huge strides in terms of getting more renewables onto the grid, but by having a flexible power generation as a backup there, essentially, that generation will be there. So you can maximize the number of renewables on the grid if you've got a backup, knowing that you can then call on this flexible power generation to fill the gaps, essentially, when there aren't sufficient renewables on the system. So it's not like
what batteries do, but I guess the argument is that CCUS could fill the role of providing flexible backup like batteries do if we can't build as many batteries as we need to.
Yeah, it's another form of providing resilience on the system, and there are studies that show that overall provide cost savings. I think it's around £280 per household per year on the system of being able to do this. So by maximising the number of renewables, then we can also, overall, we can achieve a saving to the overall system for consumers.
So can we talk about what these things actually look like? So what does, say we've got a, we talked about CCGTs there. So the most efficient gas plant on the grid is combined cycle gas turbine plant. So you've got a gas turbine and you've got a steam cycle and you're really, let's say 50% efficient thermal efficiency. And what you can do with that is you can put all the carbon that produces on the, out of the exhaust, you can then do CCUS with it. So what's the CCUS bit look like? What does the actual plant look like? Is this like 10 football fields, like a pocket watch size? Those are really bad examples. But, what are these things? How much do they cost? Because just on what you're saying there, the abated gas plants will run after renewables. Totally makes sense because capturing carbon from gas plants is going to be really expensive. So it makes sense that renewables will be dispatched and run a lot more. But yeah, what do these things actually look like?
They're fitted on. So the capture plant will be fitted onto the power station. It's a big construction. You need land. You need a site for it. It's definitely not pocket watch size. I mean, obviously it depends on each individual plant in terms of how big it is, but they're big. They are very big and you need to be able to put them on site. New builds are obviously easier because you can do this all in once rather than retrofitting onto a particular site, because you've got to be able to have that space and access there. But it is a significant piece of infrastructure. I mean, I think as we sort of see capture technologies evolving, things will change there, but they are very, very large. They're not multiple football field size. They are, they're not bigger than the power station itself, but it is, we are talking about a big piece of infrastructure that needs to be constructed right next to these industries. So, when we're talking about some of the other industries, about refineries, cement plants, etc., it is one of the challenges is that you've got to build this capture plant right next to on the same site as these industries to be able to operate successfully there. So, there are many variables about where it's viable, and it has to be obviously next to a pipeline that can transport the CO2 out to the storage. But also you've got you do have to have space and be able to operate these capture plants right next to industries, and that's not always possible from how they're located and structured, and obviously often in big industrial parks. So it is something that has to be really carefully considered.
Can we just talk through each of the letters in turn? So the capture bit, and then the storage bit, and then the utilization bit, which is the bit that's been fairly recently added onto, is that right? Because some people talk about it, some people don't. The capture bit, what does the plant actually do? So it captures CO2, thinking about it as if it was a combustion vehicle, an old-fashioned combustion vehicle. I can think about putting a balloon on the exhaust pipe of a combustion vehicle. Is it like that? Is that what you're doing? You're just capturing the exhaust gases and putting them somewhere? Or do you have to scrub them? Do you have to clean them? Do you have to apply a process to them?
Yeah, you essentially, so you're capturing, for post-combustion emissions, you're capturing those emissions, so you're capturing it at the point source and removing the CO2. So there's three types of capture. There's post-combustion capture, pre-combustion, and oxy-fuel combustion. And they, to get all together, I mean, those capture methods can capture more than sort of 95% of the CO2. So there are different capture methods. So I don't know how much you would want me to go into detail, but essentially it's separated out. And, many of the most common use is amine based, using solvents to separate out the CO2. And then the CO2 is then compressed and transported, gone on to your next letter in the acronym, but it's compressed and transported out to a storage site or a utilization plant. And that's normally carried out by pipeline or ship. So it's separated out using a solvent process and then transported by pipeline or ship, and then either used in a product. So for the utilization part, it's either then incorporated into a product, and it depends on the type of product, about for how long that CO2 stays in that product. You know, something like food and drink can be quite temporary, but used in building materials and aggregates, then it can be much longer term. Or it's stored and then it's injected into a suitable storage site, which is deep under the seabed. So it's around between 1 and 3 kilometers below the seabed. And that can often be, I mean, most commonly depleted oil and gas fields, but also deep saline formations. And then it's injected into those and stored there in perpetuity.
So what we're proposing here is that industry and power generation that produces carbon, we build new plants next to it that captures that carbon. And then we get it offshore. We have to get it through a pipeline and then onto a ship and then you get it offshore to an old gas or oil well, and then you pump it down under the ground, and then it's there for good.
Yep.
Okay.
In simple terms, yeah. I mean, there is onshore storage in other parts of the world. In the UK and Europe, we're not looking at onshore storage at the moment. In the UK, there are no plans to look at onshore storage. We have huge potential in terms of our geological storage, because we've got the North Sea and the Irish Sea. There are a lot of depleted oil and gas fields there that can be used, as well as saline aquifers. We've got a third of Europe's potential geological CO2 storage, and all, you know, that's equivalent to all the other EU states combined, and Norway has very slightly more. So there's huge opportunity there and huge potential that, you know, we don't need to look at onshore. We know how to we're familiar with the offshore. We've got the skills and expertise in the UK to do that, and so that's where storage
is. That because we've got so many oil and gas fields that we've depleted over time for the oil and gas in the North Sea and elsewhere, that now we can find these old wells that we kind of would have decommissioned and put behind us. We can now find a new use for them by storing carbon in them.
Yeah, essentially. And there are other, I mean, around the world, I think lots of countries are looking at their potential to do this. So, you know, Norway is already doing it and has a significant potential in terms of their geological storage, but the UK again a lot. But yeah, as you mentioned, the US, you know, is also doing a lot. There are many countries around the world that are now looking to deploy CCUS, but a lot of it depends on having the emissions and so the need to store, but also the potential in terms of what's the offshore storage potential there.
Yeah, there must be it's almost like the market for storing CO2 needs a minimum amount of emissions for the numbers to make sense. So you almost have this weird incentive, which is the incentive for the store to make storage make sense is to build an energy system in the future that actually is reliant on burning more fossil fuels, because you have to get this thing at scale, right? Because a small scale, if you've got to build all these plants, and then pipelines are expensive, and all the compression stations and all the other stuff, you really need to do this at a massive scale to make it work. So there is a need. You need the demand side is the demand and supply side, whichever one it is a key part of the economics of making carbon capture and storage work.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd disagree on that. I mean, we have more than enough emissions. You know, even with making the reductions that we don't need to be looking to create more. There is certainly a need. And in terms of the UK's overall emissions, and then we've looked in the CCSA, we've looked at the overall pipeline of projects. And we know, I think the UK emissions now are something like 390 million tons, I think, per annum. Need to double check that. But in the UK, we've looked at the pipeline of projects that are looking to deploy CCUS. And that's comes up to 92 million tons of CO2 per year. So, you know, there are many more emissions. We're not looking to create more emissions to justify this. And we know that we've got to deploy at scale.
What about pipelines? So what's the plan with transporting this stuff around the place? Or do you have to, let's talk about locations. Do you have to build, there's talk of clusters. It's very hydrogeny in that you need to be, there's a localized aspect to it. You probably need to be closer to the offshore place where you're going to store it or use it. So how are you guys thinking about location and and all of that?
I mean, the UK's taken this approach, and we are now third time around in terms of the UK at getting close to deploying CCUS. But this time, I think that the key difference is, well, one is that net zero is in legislation. So there's an absolute key driver there that we have to get there. And the second is taking this cluster approach, which hadn't been taken previously. And so this is really looking at groups of emitters, industrial emitters, and then building one set of infrastructure around the pipeline and the store that those emitters can then share that infrastructure. And it's seen as a far less risky approach because you haven't got one emitter relying on one store and one store relying on one emitter, which is obviously a much more high risk approach. And so a number of stores that can then share this infrastructure. So by doing so, you know, you will build a pipeline that will ideally take a route through these emitters that makes sense, that will be the most cost-efficient and cost-effective solution. And I think now we're sort of seeing globally that this type of approach is now being rolled out. It's seen as the most efficient way to go. And from, you know, it has multiple benefits. So yes, you're able to decarbonize a number of industries at the same time. They can share that infrastructure. But also the industries in, you know, particularly in the UK, the areas we're looking at, it's the East Coast, it's Humber, North West, South Wales. These are all our key industrial areas. And so those industries have got to decarbonize one way or another. If they don't decarbonize, there are, you know, they can either potentially offshore move somewhere else, or some of them are looking at closing down. So by developing this infrastructure, you also get those industries a new lease of life, so we can retain jobs and skills in those areas, we can revitalize those industrial areas, and also build up a new industry that we can then export and scale. But one of the elements that will come out of that is a new low carbon products market. So we'll talk about low carbon cement, low carbon steel, and these products will then be sold on the open market, and there'll be a demand for those as we start to see more countries sort of move towards delivering net zero. So the whole approach makes economic sense, but it also makes a sort of social economic sense as well in terms of how we're dealing with it. I mean, you asked about transport. It's not purely pipe. It's pipeline in these industrial clusters where that makes sense. But there are some industrial clusters that aren't located right next to a store. And there's also been a lot of work looking at non-pipeline transport, so shipping, road or rail, and an awful lot of work in terms of looking at the shipping of CO2. So to move the CO2 from an industrial area that will be then moved onto a ship, will be piped onto a ship, but then the ship will transport it around to a store, and then it'll be injected either, you know, on the harbour or just off on a hub offshore. So there are various, it's starting now to build up in terms of how else can we transport it, and how can we also target those industries that won't be in a cluster and disperse sites that are not located near anything. And so then we're looking at road and rail. How can we move that CO2 to a store?
Interesting. Okay, let's go back to power decarbonisation. Okay, so what are the first large scale CCUS projects that we're going to see, and when are we going to see them?
In the UK, I mean, the government has set a target for net zero power by 2035, and that could require, I guess, around 10 gigawatts of power generation with CCUS, and which will potentially require around sort of 18 million tonnes of CO2 to be captured and stored per year. There is also a target of having one CCUS power plant by 2030. So the two targets, government targets, okay, Don't exactly line up and mirror. But where
so
we are
just
in the...
Just to get this clear, right? So we've got to have 10 gigs by 2035, which is, let's say, 5 to 10 combined cycle units. 5 really big ones and 10 normal size ones. Yeah. And then but we've got to do one by 2030. We've got to get moving with this thing if it's going to happen.
We've definitely got to get moving with this.
Why has it not already happened? What's the hold up?
I think your first question was how long have I worked, and as I joined the CCSA 3 years ago, just before they launched the cluster sequencing process. So I can very clearly see the progress that the UK has made and where we are. So we are now 3 years in. We've designed some really good business models. There's a world-leading regulatory framework. Legislation is in place with the energy bill that was passed last autumn. All the components are there. We had $20 billion committed from the Treasury in the spring budget last year towards early deployment of CCS. And we are now in negotiation.
Just for CCS?
$20 billion for early deployment of carbon capture and storage. So the building blocks are all there. So we're now in the process. The government selected 8 projects to move into negotiation. So there's 2 clusters, one on the East Coast and one on Liverpool Bay, HyNet, and 8 projects that could connect to those. And they are in negotiations with government, and we're hoping that we'll see some final investment decisions in September this year. They've run a competitive process, and it's been a very long process. We also had a year of sort of political turmoil in the UK during the last 3-year period. So that delayed things quite a lot in terms of getting things through, getting decisions made. So I think everyone would agree it's taken a bit longer than anticipated this time, but we are now sort of nearing the stages. But of those 8 projects, one of those is a power plant. So you asked about where we are with that. So we should see one in place by 2030, but I think that power plant is 860 megawatts. So when you talked about the 10 gigawatts and where we are with 860 megawatts, that we've got a way to go.
Still a big plant though, 860 megawatts, yeah. A big plant. And if you guys can make this happen, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And so on that plant, will 100% of the CO2 be captured?
Capture rates in the business models are all, so the government has designed these business models and capture rates are meant to be around 95%. So
okay. Wow.
All of it will be captured, but with a capture rate of estimating around 95%. So yeah, awesome. It is significant. And I think for us, it's really important to get these first projects built. We have to start building it to get the infrastructure built so that people can start to see it, believe it. The first projects there, we can learn from those and keep rolling out. I mean, the government's target is that we're capturing 20 to 30 million tons by 2030. And that increases, almost doubles to 50 to 60 million tons by 2035. So there's huge ambition. We've got a lot of growth that we've got to get to. But as I said, in the CCSA, we've done a piece of work looking at the pipeline of projects, and we know of projects that together add up to around 94 million tons. So, we need around half of them to go forward to meet that 2035 target. So there is a huge challenge here, but a huge opportunity. And we know we have the emissions there that need to be captured. So I think it's just pressing forward and keeping that momentum and keeping the industry moving. I mean, and I think it's worth saying, when we talked about the £20 billion that the government has committed, the industry, we estimate the industry will have put in, but there will be private sector investment of around £30 billion by 2030. And the way that the business models are structured, it's a contract for difference business model. It's very similar to what we've had for offshore wind. So if essentially it's topping up the carbon price until the carbon price is sufficiently high to drive this itself. And so any drawing on public funding, on the government funding, won't be until these projects are operational. So all this private investment is front loading. Being put there to build these projects. There's billions of pounds already being put in to move forward with these projects. And then only at the point at which they start to operate is when that government funding would be called upon to bridge that gap.
And the government funding is, so that's interesting. So it's a contract for difference, which is it's essentially a subsidy like the offshore wind subsidy, renewable subsidy. And the bet is that the carbon price will recover to a price that is economically viable. What price is that? So at the moment, carbon's about 10 quid, something like that, isn't it, in the UK? I have to double check this morning. What carbon price?
A bit higher than that.
A bit higher than that, yeah. It went up to 18, 90, and it's just down, it hit the floor.
Yeah, right? I think it's around 40, I think, at the moment.
40, right, I'm miles out then. So what carbon price do these projects need?
$1 million question. I mean, they are, it ranges across the projects. I mean, we are not in these final negotiations with government, so we don't know where these final numbers are coming out. I know that I was at something yesterday and somebody was talking about projects in the US, removal projects. They were talking about BECCS projects, I think, that were looking at $350 per ton, but they're at the upper end of this. So there is a range, and I probably wouldn't want to put a number on in this type of conversation, but it will, you know, we have done modeling to say that the numbers, as the carbon price goes up, but also as the industry is deployed at scale, these numbers are going to fall. And we will, you know, as the also the low carbon products markets takes off, there will be extra incentive here, and for the removals market as well, you know, that all of these components will start to produce a package that we expect to see if everything is put in place, if these frameworks are put in place and work effectively, we would expect to see government funding starting to fall significantly from the early 2030s onwards. So it's about pump priming the market and moving it forward. And whatever pound per ton we come out at the beginning in the initial negotiations, those numbers will fall. And particularly as well as the clusters fill up and you have more projects using that shared infrastructure, of costs will then, of course, decrease. I mean, there are projects in the UK that are already looking at doing it without subsidy. So, you know, they're, it's not all driven by subsidy, and if they, you know, if they can get off-takers,
how does that work? Doing it without subsidy at the moment, if there isn't a demand side, if there isn't a market for the carbon, how can a project make sense without a government subsidy?
There are some, in terms of there are some utilization projects that are already operating and moving forward and making products out of that CO2, and they don't need government subsidy to move forward. But also those that are looking at supplying sustainable air fuel, there is a market there that can help to drive that. So it's not all, there are already markets that are developing in play. So it doesn't all need subsidy, but for something like some of the industries that we're looking at, the cement industry, you know, we will need subsidy to top up that at the moment. And then would hope that once the carbon prices recovers and it's sufficiently high, and once there are there's a low carbon product market there to sell that low carbon cement, and with a low carbon border adjustment mechanism in place to, you know, to make sure that that can move across borders, then all these components will start to build up that whole business case.
Right, now to the last two questions, the two most exciting questions. Firstly, anything you want to plug, anything you want to get out to our listeners, big announcements, big projects, anything like that that you want to talk about?
I think, I mean, the key thing for us is that we really want the cluster program to move forward. So we're expecting these final investment decisions for the first projects to move forward from that. We're also looking at the potential of cross-border. So the UK could have, you know, we have more than enough storage to store our own domestic emissions. There is a huge potential there to also store emissions from neighbouring countries or elsewhere where the CO2 can be shipped to those stores. And obviously the CCSA, we play a really key role in pulling the industry together and driving that forward and learning across the industry. But also, you know, we do that globally as well and engage with projects all over. We have a big conference in October where we bring all those global players together. I think we had 850 delegates there last year, really looking at some of the key issues in terms of what's, you know, how do we move through consenting points? What are the key points around the technologies? How can we move some of the new technologies forward and get them to deploy at scale? What learnings can we provide from each of the projects that are moving? So, and also bringing the investors and insurers to the conversation, I think, to make sure that they're also engaged. They understand the industry, they understand the opportunities and the risks there and how they can then get involved. So I think for us, it's about being transparent, making sure that that everyone is aware of the benefits of carbon capture, that they can really promote that globally. You know, we need it within the UK, but also globally. And I think moving forward as an industry and helping to dispel some of those myths that, you know, this is just oil and gas in perpetuity, and you know, really helping to move that forward. So we've got quite a lot of, you know, we need work around the acceptance of net zero, and the public perception piece here is really critical. So I think, yeah, I mean, from our point of view, it's have a look at the CCSA website, look at the resources they have there, think about joining the industry trade association, but also come to the events, come to the conference and help us, you know, for any decision makers. I think listening is to really pull together and deploy this industry. I think if we don't, we're just losing time. And as I said right at the beginning, you know, all the scenarios point towards we have to have CCUS in some form, and we'll need removals longer term, you know, to perhaps move. So when there are residual emissions post 2050, we're going to have removals to make sure that we are at net zero beyond that point. So it's around really moving forward quickly and getting these projects underway.
All right. And what's your contrarian view?
I don't think I have one. I think we need to be realistic. I think this is an industry that is deploying at scale. With any new projects, there will be things that don't quite work out as anticipated or expected. And I think we need to be prepared for that, be realistic about what they're going to look like, learn from it, be transparent. And we can do that globally. You know, any CCUS project is a project that we can learn from and look at. We know the technology works, so let's pull together to kind of work at how we can move this. So I think a sort of realistic position there in terms of how it doesn't, and don't, you know, without vying technologies against each other, I don't think that's a sort of useful view here. So I think some
pull you up on one thing there. So you say there's a few things you said there that I thought were really interesting, but you said we know the technology works, but do we know this technology works? Well, I don't think we do know that this technology works at the scale that we want to do it.
I think, I mean, the projects that have been in operation, the projects all have been doing this. It's not at the scale that we need to get to, but they have been doing, I think the projects in Norway are storing 2 million tonnes a year and have been doing that for 25 years. So obviously we're talking about significant scaling up if we're going to get to 20 to 30 million tonnes by 2030. But it is the same technology, and the technology is only going to improve. There are lots of new capture technologies that are coming on. And I think when you speak to the engineers and those involved, this isn't, you know, for a lot of them, I think, you know, they see this as really a low risk. You know, storing CO2 we're not storing a flammable product here. It's not as tricky as oil and gas. It's, you know, they understand how it behaves. There'll be ongoing monitoring and verification in terms of those stores and looking at what's done there. You know, we know how pipelines work. There's nothing particularly new in any part of this industry. It is just the scaling up and moving things at scale. And I think that's the big challenge, you know, in the UK for us to build big infrastructure. Can we do that? Can we take those risks? Can we move forward and operate quickly? We're seeing things move really quickly in China. Europe is actually moving quite quickly now. The Middle East, you know, there are countries where I think you can make a decision and then you can start doing it pretty quickly. And we will start seeing things at scale quite quickly there. You know, we have quite long consenting processes. We have to go through planning regimes. There's lots of mechanisms in place, I think, in the UK, lots of paperwork, lots of red tape to make sure that we're building something sort of that ticks all the boxes and meets our requirements. But it does mean it makes it a bit slower.
Well, £20 billion promised by the government, there's a hell of a kickstart. This thing is going to happen, like it or not, I think. And we've got to do it in the most efficient, capital efficient way as we possibly can. I want to say a massive thank you to you, Olivia, for coming on the podcast. I come at things from a very, almost, I'm not an electrification absolutist, but I do think a lot more things can be solved through electrification than more electrification is generally the best allocation of capital. And so I really appreciate you coming on and some of my difficult questions, handling them really well. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me. And I think, yes, this isn't instead of electrification, I think as well as. So I hope you can sort of see all those solutions working in the round.
All right. Thank you. Until next time.
Great. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Transmission, a Modo Energy podcast. Transmission delivers conversations from industry leaders and experts exploring energy markets and the operations and technologies related to grid-scale battery energy storage. Check out our other episodes by searching Transmission wherever you get your podcasts. check out the Energy Academy, our video crash course on how markets in Great Britain and ERCOT work, or head to modoenergy.com to see our written research. Thanks for listening.